Welcome to this podcast of Sunday nights on ABC Local Radio. I hope you enjoy the program. You're on Sunday night on ABC Radio around Australia through Radio Australia and via the web to the world. Time to catch up with the news of religion in other parts of the world now. And we're joined this evening for the first time by Ted Olson. Ted is the managing editor of Christianity Today. Christianity Today being one of the largest circulating religious magazines in the world, reflective of broad evangelical opinion in the United States of America. Ted Olson, welcome to Sunday Night.
Thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
How do you describe Christianity Today and where it fits in the religious market?
Well, it's a magazine that was founded by Billy Graham in 1956 to kind of be similar to The Atlantic or The New Yorker, a magazine for thoughtful evangelicals, thought leaders within the church, the Protestant church generally. But it's got a lot of news. It's also got a lot of essays. It's really considered to be one of the main religious periodicals. We actually have quite a few international readers as well. About 10 to 20% of our readers are international.
So what would be your circulation base?
We have about 300,000 readers, about a paid circulation of 150,000.
So let's talk about some of the issues this month for Christianity Today. Of course, we can't get away from the fact that we are all still here.
Right, exactly. And I know you've talked about this a bit last week with Ruth Gledhill, but yes, Jesus did not return for Harold Camping's rapture. You know, last week you discussed quite a bit about Harold Camping and this idea of the rapture, but this week it still was the number one religion story, and the conversation has really shifted, at least in the evangelical and Protestant circle. Is Harold Camping one of us? Is he kind of a member of the family, or is he more similar to a cult leader, someone far more on the fringes? So is this kind of an internal discussion we're having over Camping, or is this more of a relationship to another religion?
Yes, the general readership of newspapers would sort of see him as being right out on the fringe. But for those understanding Protestant and evangelical religious traditions particularly, there's always been an edge of end times prophecy skirting around, particularly in the United States in the 19th century, with the emergence of such groups as the Mormons, Jehovah's Witnesses, Seventh-day Adventists. Many of those groups all had millennialist edges to them.
Right, and even more recently here in the 90s and throughout the last decade, there were a series of books, these Left Behind novels, that were really bestsellers. There were just dozens of them. And they kind of were focused on this kind of end times theology, and really heavily focused on this rapture, which is kind of not quite the second coming of Jesus. It's kind of the one and a half coming of Jesus, where he comes and catches up believers in the air, and then comes the tribulation when all the non-Christians face all sorts of trials. And, you know, in the evangelical Protestant, kind of conservative Protestant American landscape, it's fairly popular. I mean, it's not overwhelming. There was a survey among the leaders of the National Association of Evangelicals. About 65% of those denominational leaders, large church pastors, about 65% said they're what they would consider premillennial. They believe Jesus will return and then later on will have his kingdom established. But even within that 65%, not a majority of that would necessarily believe in the rapture. But it's far more popular in the pews than it is in the pulpits. So even within Americans in general, you have a majority, about 55% of Americans believe in this rapture. But Harold Camping has a different view of the rapture than most of them. He has a slightly different view of the rapture than even the people who believe in the rapture would subscribe to.
So where does he think it fits? Because he's got a particular mathematical formula he was working on, I think.
Right. You know, most evangelicals would be happy to cite the Bible verse, no man knows the day nor the hour, and that Jesus says he'll come like a thief in the night. He is much more into kind of the numerological, trying to figure out a Bible code to describe this. And the other thing that I think really has set him apart from kind of the evangelical mainstream is that many, many years ago, he has said, you know, that people who really, you know, want to follow Jesus should get out of the churches. He said, you know, the churches have all become apostate, and you need to leave them to be faithful to Jesus. Well, of course, that did not go over terribly well with the with the churches, and so he is definitely kind of seen as a side figure. And I think, you know, just looking at some of the responses to the non-rapture this week, probably the strongest criticisms that I saw were from evangelicals, and particularly evangelicals who believe in the rapture, who say, you know, you've really kind of ruined this doctrine for the rest of us. We can't kind of talk about it as good news when you've made such a bad news embarrassment out of it.
There's a whole other story that hangs on this, and we may get a chance to touch on it a little later on. But let's talk about another matter of division, the unkindest cut of all. I understand that San Francisco is about to debate a ban on circumcision.
Yeah, they've actually got enough signatures now to actually put it on the ballot in November. So between now and November, expect to hear quite a bit of debate about this proposal. And it's already spreading to other cities. Santa Monica, which is still in California, but quite a bit distant, both geographically and also kind of psychographically. Santa Monica is probably going to have a resolution or even a law against circumcision.
So where's this coming from?
Well, it's really coming from, there's a small but vocal anti-circumcision movement in the U.S. We've had a strong move to limit, what is euphemistically called female circumcision, but genital cutting with women. There is this movement that says, hey, why stop at women, and particularly why should parents be allowed to make this major decision on behalf of their male children? San Francisco has always been a city that walks a slightly different way, so it's possible that this may happen. But, you know, it is news of the weird. What's interesting to me is reading some of the legal scholars, they say, you know, this may actually not just go through. Let's say, you know, the voters do approve of it. But given the law in California and given the way in which the California courts have set up parental rights versus children's rights and the way in which they've set up religious freedom versus kind of public safety issues, that actually this could survive court challenges, which will be very key because this is really a growing area in the United States are these kinds of children's religious rights versus their parents. Key case is right now up the coast in Oregon over faith healing. There's a lot of parents being brought to trial over deciding to rely on prayer rather than doctors. So the big debate there is if those children fall ill or die, can they be criminally liable? And so this, to some degree, connects with those cases as well.
The Jewish community must be particularly stressed about this issue.
Oh, they're livid. Yes, there's, of course, all sorts of allegations that this is entirely an anti-Semitic move. There's, of course, strong comments from Moyles who say, law or no law, we are, of course, going to continue doing this. But, you know, what's interesting in San Francisco is San Francisco is not a particularly religious city, Jewish, Christian, or otherwise. And there's a number of parents who say, no, we will be circumcising for non-religious reasons.
Yes, because there's a health argument as well, isn't there? Particularly the debate over HIV and AIDS and whether
right.
or not circumcision isn't a useful thing anyway.
Right. There's some research that says circumcision helps prevent the transmission of HIV, which, of course, in San Francisco is a major issue.
Interesting stuff. That is a story that some of our other broader agencies may be interested in picking up here in Australia. Let's move overseas for a moment. There's been an awful amount of turmoil in religion in Africa over recent years. Algeria now enters the fray. I understand Algeria has ordered all Protestant churches to close.
They have. This goes back to a 2006 law that was passed that mandated registration for non-Islamic houses of worship. What happened was that the law had passed. It wasn't terribly enforced in the beginning. But what also happened was that any church that had tried to register, actually get this registration that was mandated, was not able to get it. The government just would hold the registration materials or would stop answering queries into how far registration could go. So you have all of these Protestant churches that have sought registration but haven't been granted it. In 2008, the government decided to crack down and closed a whole lot of Protestant churches, especially in an area where Protestantism, particularly of a Pentecostal bent, was growing very strongly. But there was a strong reaction to that, and it's been pretty quiet since 2008. Now, this last week, there's been a governor, a regional governor, who is threatening to shut down these churches that are unregistered. The churches have gone to the national government and said, you know, are you really going to shut us down? And there's been some question about that. We have not yet heard what has happened. It'll take probably another few days for us to hear. But the Protestant leaders do say that they did plan to meet today. And so we'll see if that winds up being a major issue of fighting in the future. I mean, Algeria, you know, now that southern Sudan is breaking away, it is the largest country in Africa, and because of the Arab Spring protests, it's certainly a country that's being watched very heavily on what kinds of freedom they will be allowing their residents to enjoy.
Is this something that's particularly targeted at independent Protestant churches, or does it affect those who have sort of mainline international affiliations as well?
Oh, no, it's definitely something that affects the Presbyterians are pretty significant there, Anglicans. It affects a lot of the established churches, but it seems like what the government is particularly concerned about is the rather rapid, I mean, I don't want to overstate it, it is still a very dominantly Muslim country, but in certain areas there has been a rise in conversions to, well, not just conversions, but also people who are immigrants or foreign workers who are more what you would consider to be independent Pentecostal church types, not just established mainline churches.
Coming back to the USA, we mentioned earlier Harold Camping and the sort of novelty and interest in his excesses, but there is another debate going on within evangelical circles in the United States that's deeper and perhaps more of more long-term significance, and this is over a particular pastor, a megachurch pastor and very popular preacher internationally, Rob Bell, who's recent book, Love Wins, has caused a stir because of his attitude to people's ultimate fate. That is, if God is a God of love, what do we make of the doctrine of hell? And they've accused Rob Bell of being a bit soft on hell, and this is causing some controversy, because it actually opens up another debate. That is the continuing debate about who owns the sort of evangelical Protestant theological tradition in the United States, whether it's John Calvin or Jacob Arminius. We're back fighting the Reformation.
A bit. And one of the interesting things is that Rob Bell early on was very much tied in with a resurgence in the U.S., particularly among young men in their 20s, of an attraction towards Calvinism. Rob Bell is a pastor who was strongly supportive of another pastor called John Piper, who's kind of the leader of this neo-Calvinist movement. One of his early books had Read Everything John Piper Has Written. And now it was John Piper who tweeted very famously now, Farewell Rob Bell, when this book came out. And so there is, and I would say a lot of the most vocal critics of Rob Bell's most latest book have been from that kind of young Reformed, young Calvinist movement here in the U.S. You know, the other issue is just that Rob Bell is kind of the personification of kind of a young, hip Christianity, particularly a young, hip evangelical Christianity.
That has some intellectual heft to it. That is, it regards itself as being able to think and debate in ways that perhaps weren't associated with the evangelical tradition in the past.
Right. And that, I think, is also true of the young Calvinist movement. They it's largely a reaction to youth groups, you know, the kind of what they call pizza party youth groups that are more focused on sexual ethics or, you know, just keep your pants zipped than they are in actually teaching doctrine. So both of these camps are saying, you know, let's get serious about theology. Now, Rob Bell, having been kind of an insider who's now promoting more of a universalist mode of saying, you know, in the end, God wins. You know, in the end, everyone that God wants to be saved will be saved, and he wants everyone to be saved. Therefore, everyone probably will be saved unless they really, really don't want to go to heaven. In some ways, very similar to C.S. Lewis, but in other ways, taking it a little bit further. That idea, you know, because it's so anathema to evangelicals, who are used to hearing that from theological liberals, of course, for the last 50 years or so, but to hear that from someone that has been selling these DVDs in churches and has been one of the main voices in the evangelical movement, it's quite a bit different when it's one of your own singing.
It taps into a deeper strand in American Protestantism too. That is the historic foundation of Protestantism in the Calvinism of Jonathan Edwards and the New Englanders, and that later evangelical revival which swept in through the Methodists and others, which has a more Arminian feel to it. And it's almost as though the sort of intellectual heart of Protestantism has remained Reformed, but the emotional, practical heart of Protestantism has been Arminian.
Yeah, that's largely true. There is now an increasing stream, and Jonathan Edwards is one of those figures who bridges that gap. He is someone who can connect on that emotional level, and now you see some of these leaders of the Young Reform Movement talking about revival, talking about the importance of emotion in ways that kind of is against that kind of old idea of the Calvinist who always has the kind of frowny face. In fact, John Piper, who's this leader of this Young Calvinist movement, who's another pastor in Minnesota, his big phrase is Christian hedonism. And the attraction is largely to John Piper's idea of the title of his book, Enjoying God and Desiring God, you know, that emotional resonance connection. So I think that the Calvinists are trying to kind of recapture some of that emotional and revivalist bent that has perhaps been more associated with the other side of the movement.
Well, let's talk about another form of spiritual revival, or should I say apotheosis, this week as Oprah farewelled from the television screens of the world.
Yeah, and this was very interesting. I know it just aired there in Australia as well as here. And, you know, Oprah is certainly the icon of American spirituality in many, many ways. And in a lot of ways,
it was sort of like a mega church rally. There was Aretha Franklin, everybody else.
Oh, and at the end of it, you know, she does this long thing where she, you know, thanks Jesus and says, you know, she couldn't have done it without Jesus, and that it's really all been about grace over these, multiple decades of her being on television. And yeah, it did have almost this Christian benediction aspect to it. But at the same time, she comes from a Baptist background, but she's very eclectic in the areas in which she draws her spirituality from, just like what we're seeing very commonly, in the American streets. You know, she pulls a little bit from Buddhism. She pulls a little bit from Hinduism. Of course, recently Eckhart Tolle was one of her main kind of spiritual gurus. You know, who pulls kind of this smorgasbord of spirituality, and ultimately for Oprah, it's kind of religion as self-improvement. You know, it's you know, only you will know the spirituality, you know, the spiritual mix that's right for you, and the point of it is kind of this self-realization aspect.
It's a sort of variation on ancient Gnosticism.
It is, but at the same time, you know, it's a Gnosticism that wants to see itself as, you know, kind of mainstream, and with it, it's not a Gnosticism that seeks kind of a secret knowledge. It's a Gnosticism that seeks kind of a personal knowledge, that, you know, kind of anyone can have these basic spiritual truths, and it's kind of, don't all of these religions at their essence teach the same thing? Is kind of the core idea of kind of this Oprah type spirituality. When Gnosticism was really focused on, if we, you know, there's this secret knowledge out there that we can learn and separate ourselves from these terrible bodies, where Oprah was very much here and now, wanting a better body, wanting a better lifestyle, but also better habits. You know, so it's really this kind of self-help stream of American spirituality, and that you'd find in a lot of Christian churches that are really about what you would hear addressing felt needs.
I think the high point for all of us was the Tom Cruise moment, and that's probably appropriate in terms of the context of this discussion.
Yeah, certainly.
Ted Olson, great to talk with you.
It's been great having been on your program.
And thank you for the opportunity of joining you. We'll catch up in a few weeks' time on Sunday night on ABC Radio. Ted Olson, the Managing Editor of Christianity Today.
This has been a podcast of Sunday Nights on ABC Local Radio. You can download your favourite Sunday night interviews from our website at abc.net.au/sundaynights with an S. Thank you for listening.